allow the IEC to arrive and then they've arrived. Welcome, Chairperson. Welcome, the CEO, Sushu. And we're very happy today that you are here. And we already have a student interest to hear what is happening at the business around the 3rd of October 2016. And of course, that we really need to appreciate the work that you've done yesterday to ensure that political parties have the correct conscience of the importance of the elections and to play their role to ensure that you are able to deliver free and fair elections. I'm sure everybody knows that there are quite a good number of things that affect elections that are beyond your power, that you can't do. The other actors have to actually play the part. And the workshop and the meeting that you had yesterday, it looks like one of those to bring those parties to come into the game and play their part to ensure that we continue and hold credible elections in South Africa, something that Africa and the West knows us to be able to do much, much better. And we really thank you for having done that. And also, we will continue ourselves as a committee as well to encourage civil society and political parties to make sure that you are a citizen to be able to do your work. We will continue and make that noise and hope that it will make sense to many of those that are supposed to take it seriously. Honorable members, I need to welcome membership of the Portfolio Committee on COPTA. Amongst ourselves, we have the chair, Honorable Masondo is here. Then we have got also Honorable Honorable Mdagane, yes. Yes, I think maybe that's the ethics knowledge is still in my head. Yes, Honorable Masondo is here. Then Honorable Matiebe. Oh, Matiebe, yeah. I know the same name, but I'm trying to read what is here. And then we have got Honorable Mapulane, who's also the chairperson of PC on Environmental Affairs. And then we have got Honorable Maluleke here. Then Honorable Mter. They are here from the Committee on Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. Honorable members, we are expecting today to be visited by the chairperson of the Electoral Commission, who Mr. Glenn Mashini is Glenton. In food, if I'm correct. And then, but famously known as Glenn Mashini. Then we were expecting to see Uteri as usual, and then it looks like today he may have missed the flight. Then we have got the CEO, Sushu Meza, and also joined by Umlungisi Kalem here. And we did ask that the Department of Home Affairs, because the IEC works through the Home Affairs, then Home Affairs must be represented by senior officials when the IEC comes and speaks to us about this agenda. And they have sent the Deputy Director General on Civil Services, which is Mr. Bozi Mkhize here. Then we also have the Deputy Director General on Institutional Planning and Support, Utulani Mabuso. Then we have the Chief Director on Legal Services, who advocate Dion Erasmus, is here. then we do have one of our own sermon guides here to really support them. And now, on the list of apologies, we only have one apology from the DR, who Honorable Hussein is not here, and then has apologized accordingly. And all other members that are not here for this Committee on Home Affairs, and we hope that they are still on their way to join us. Otherwise, then they won't be here. They will be here, not here by serious absence without any apology. Today, honorable members, I have already indicated that we are going to receive the briefing from the Electoral Commission of South Africa on their preparation. Both had to open voter registrations. Then we had a meeting yesterday. Then on the site as well, they had a very dangerous electoral court ruling, and then which they are appealing to the Constitutional Court. So there are quite a good number of things that are happening around the at this election, or things that are impacting on this election. Today we want to hear from the ISP how far are they with all these matters. Then we stand on top of the mountain and say we are ready. We agree with them that they are ready. Then we will only hear. Maybe we can make that determination after they have actually spoken to us. Honorable members and all our visitors and those that are coming from the media, can we allow them, the IEC, through their chairperson, to give us the briefing? We can proceed.
Thank you, Honorable Chair Mashile, Honorable Chairperson of Cooperative Governance and Environment Affairs present, and honorable members here today. It is indeed an honor and a privilege for the Commission to be invited to appraise the Joint Committee about the progress of state of affairs with respect to the preparation of the upcoming local government elections. I'd like to take this opportunity to apologize that not the full staff of the Commission is available today. Various commissioners have been deployed in different tasks and assignments as now things are actually building up into the election. But indeed, all of them have expressed the appreciation that we continue to enjoy the cordial and professional relations with the subcommittees that we have to account to as a public institution. Honorable members, indeed, yesterday was a major key milestone that we as a commission in the timetable related to the election that we managed to accomplish. And I will just briefly share with the members the progress with respect to those matters, and then with me is our Chief Electoral Officer, who will also share with the members the technical details about the state of affairs, where we are. Starting with the events of yesterday, we had the honor of actually having all the 13 political parties represented in our national parliament, represented by their leaders, and the purpose of the event yesterday was actually the signing of the Electoral Code of Conduct. As we may all be aware that the code of conduct is actually prescribed in the laws and in the acts for any particular political party to participate in our democratic elections. The political parties have to actually pledge and sign a particular code of conduct. And indicated in that presentation yesterday that there are a number of key milestones that are linked to the elections. But the code of conduct is different to all of them because it actually is not in the timetable. The reason for it is the fact that the code of conduct spans over a period which is the pre-election period, the election period, and the post-election period. And as such, it is not in the timetable. But it's a very important part of the election activities. There are other that are also well known to some of the honorable members, which are now to follow. For example, the proclamation of the election, which has to be done by the minister responsible for the cooperative government and traditional affairs. And after that, then the certification of the actual voters' roll, which is the basis of the contestation. And we also have the nomination and confirmation of the candidates. And as the leaders and the honorable members present here are aware, already there's activity that is actually going on with regards to that. Then the main event, which is similar to a cup final, is that it is the actual conduct of the elections. And finally, the announcement of the results. Now, the code of conduct is actually required that all the participants, they actually make that pledge, which is also in line with our constitutional democracy. And the leaders make that pledge, not only that they will commit and abide by it, but it is also that they would actually protect the referee, which is the commission. This is similar to any game. If the game is to take place, it requires the referee, it requires the players, and it requires that the supporters, all of them, cooperate. And in our case, we've actually put it before all South Africans and leaders of the political parties that the commission is part of that particular exercise. Now, in any particular game, there are rules. And if there are no rules, all of us know what may ensue. At its best, if the game proceeds, it will ensure that we have the results that are embraced by everybody. But if the spectators decide to throw stones, or if the players decide to take the ball and stab it like one time Bob Bart once did in the Morocco Swallows match, the referee can only just ask. Yeah. Remember that match. At the best, a referee can check the linesman and walk out of the game. This actually is what the code of conduct is all about, is that South Africa's democracy indeed is a constitutional democracy, and the code of conduct is the rule of law. And we are all bound to actually ensure that we play by the rules. This does not mean it's only the players. The commission as well has a responsibility on its shoulders to ensure that it upholds its part of the bargain and its part of the responsibility until the match is over. So we made that appeal, and we made an appeal to say that leaders that have made the pledge is not a pledge for that they are making for themselves, but it is a pledge that binds the candidates, it's a pledge that binds all the party officials and the office bearers, the pledge that binds the representatives of the parties, the pledge that binds the card-carrying members of the various parties, and finally also the pledge that binds even its supporters. And the pledge is that at all times the leaders are going to ensure that there is compliance with the code, and that henceforth they will take reasonable measures that ensure that the candidates, the members, the officials and supporters, all of them, they do comply. So, honorable members, from the Electoral Commission, we said yesterday, let the game begin. And all of this is in the hands of the political parties, but also we invited the various stakeholders, members of the faith-based organizations, members of the NGOs that have an interest, international observers and domestic observers, that this particular exercise is in fact not an exercise that a person sitting as a commissioner somewhere in Pretoria is in a position that they can guarantee that at every incident, at every voting station, all will be what you call in order. Therefore, we said that this is a people and democratic system. We invite every South African. Further, we also have the honor of having the chairperson of the Electoral Court, that is the ultimate body to look into the issues and the cases. And they also made a pledge that indicated that they will create a similar thing that we did during the FIFA World Cup, a process that optimally would have a high turnaround with respect to the dealing with the various cases that that may arise during the disputes, because if in the game there are certain disputes, then you need the ultimate umpire. And the Electoral Court is there for all of us. But we are saying, let us all observe, deal with this. And in certain parties, but in the workshop that Justice Shone had with all of us, the political parties, was that they indicated that the Electoral Court is a very simple court. You don't even need to have a lawyer to go in there to report and the matters so that we can be speeded up. So we are saying, honorable members, let the game begin, but it's all in the hands of us as South Africans, that once more again we continue to realize the ideal that so many of our people actually what you call giving paid the highest price for. That is the ideal of a free, a democratic South Africa. And for those who would like to thank you, Chairperson, and invite my fellow CEO to then take you through the technical matters. I know there might be any interest with respect to the issue of what is before the court as matters then, but I prefer to say that is an exception to adjudicate. Save for one thing, whatever eventuality and outcome that may come from that decision, the Electoral Commission is ready to execute it. We are waiting for the order and we will march accordingly. There's nothing technical that we can do from the decision that will arise from there. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I without hope that as the CEO goes on, you may also try and just mitigate what you have been contacting about the one area. If ever there is any threat to your work, then we would expect that you're going to get some sort of clarification. Will you proceed, Dr. Mayor?
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members, and distinguished guests. Good morning. The preparations for 2016 municipal elections are tough, but progressing very well. I will take you through some of those issues and we can clarify as we go. In this presentation this morning, I'm going to talk about our preparations, beginning with delimitation and voting districts, the registration of voters, the voters' roll itself, the registration of political parties and liaison that we undertake with political parties, the extent to which we are recruiting people, where we, you know, how we are training them and the issues connected therewith. We will talk about what happens once proclamation is issued. And then we will talk about the determinations that the Commission needs to make in law and have made. We'll talk about securing these elections from our ICT platforms and all other related measures. Generally, we'll talk about ensuring that elections are credible and will produce fair outcomes. Chairperson, let me commence by saying development in human settlement patterns were followed until the registration weekend of the 9th and the 10th of April, which was practically the last opportunity for voters to register at the voting station in which they lived. Through this process, we came out with 22,617 voting districts. This represents a 54% growth on our voters' roll compared to that which was used in the 1999 elections. Many of these will have substations or streams, as we call them. I think that person is important. We appeared before the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs previously, indicated what we were planning at that time, and indicated that we were looking at voting stations being in the region of 22,500 to 22,600. Indeed, we have realized 22,617. This is a very important map, and members, let me apologize or beg your pardon. Through you, Chairperson, I will, this map is not the presentation that was issued earlier, but I will make this presentation in the revised form to the Secretariat. This is a very important graphic, members, if I may ask you to consider it. The light blue, which you will see in most of Western Cape, the Northern Cape, Free State, some parts of the Eastern Cape, and some part of Mpumalanga, is the ideal situation to have. The darker the map, the more difficult the story becomes. This is a story of issues that have affected demarcation in its revised form last year. And this, if you look at the northernmost part of the country, you will really doubt, Chairperson, from what you have been saying. You see one and another area there being dark. I have indicated that the darker it is, the more challenging it is. So you will see most parts of the of Limpopo, some parts of Gauteng, some parts of the Eastern Cape are fairly dark. Those are areas where we are expecting challenges, and we have had challenges. In the Eastern Cape, those are the three municipalities that have been amalgamated, and there, as you would be aware, there were a number of challenges from communities, from among political parties, and from among other stakeholders. But that is the situation we have to work with. This delimitation, as you would be aware, was concluded in 2014, early. It was reopened when the minister took office after the elections in 2014, using Section 22 of the Local Government New Power Demarcation Act, and the outcomes are the ones that we will now deal with. We'll possibly come back to this when we go forward. Now, if we look at what I had indicated, we are now done with the determination of voting districts. So this is really a progress. You will note on how demarcation progressed over the years. When one comes to registration, we started in earnest with a process of targeting voters that were affected by demarcation. Soon after it was concluded in 2014. We went to every voting district and what, where was the reduction of the demarcation process. We informed the affected voters through a process where we visit them at home. When we say targeted and communication, we literally have staff members walking to the homes of those persons that are affected. If we don't find them at home, we leave a pamphlet or some information that says, you have been affected by demarcation process here, you will no longer be using this voting district, you will be using that, or you're no longer in that ward, you're in that ward, you need to re-register. If we find them at home, we registered them on the spot. That we did, and concluded successfully. We have even done so for all of the voting districts that are in the dark and shaded areas in the map that I have shown to you earlier. We have done all of that work. We did so before and between the registration weekends that we had. We had two registration weekends, the 1st and the 6th of March and the 9th and the 10th of April this year. The voters' roll is currently at 26.3 million voters, which is a growth from 1999 of 44.6% net of deaths. In other words, of the persons that are registered having removed deceased persons from the roll. This is the story over the election period and progress that we just wanted to note has been increasing. You would particularly note that we have increased on the voters roll the number of registered voters by a million from 2014. That is the split of the registration in terms of gender and age. You will notice in this respect that we have 14.4 million people who are women and 11.8 million male on the roll. The biggest gain we've had in this election in terms of registration was the registration of persons under the age of 30. We harvested a greater amount of our new registration, at least 80%, from those efforts. When one looks at the registration weekends that we had, both of them in detail, you will note that the splits, as are indicated in the map, in the graphics below, the persons between the ages of 20 to 29 were the highest that we got. And of course, we had more women than men in those categories. We also had persons between 18 and 19, and those ones that have attained 16 but were ready to vote when they were 18, there's quite a few of those that have registered. Interestingly, you will notice that between the ages of 30 and 40, there are more men that have registered on this occasion than men. This should not be surprising us. In fact, even between 40 and 50, this should not be surprising us because we've always maintained as the Electoral Commission that we find that men are not taking that responsibility seriously, and we've been making calls to them, and you can see that they have been correcting that, and I think it is commendable. In the age groups 50 to 60, there is a fair balance, men and women registered in the same numbers. This is also very interesting in that there are persons in the past who have not participated in elections, but who have now taken to registering and ensuring that they will participate in this coming election, it would seem. This is a map of registration, and the darker the map, the more registrations we have harvested in those areas. Very interestingly, you will see that we have in those dark areas, those are where the numbers came in the most. KwaZulu-Natal produced the highest number of registrations, and that most of KwaZulu-Natal is actually dark. The Eastern Cape followed. Clearly, you will see that, and of course, Gauteng. In Limpopo, interestingly, there were higher registrations as well in many of those areas, including the area that I had indicated to you were blue in the map that I had shown you. But you will see that there are dots of, lighter dots that include a person, the area of one that you spoke about earlier. In outside of Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal, and the Eastern Cape, you see City of Cape Town being the one that has a little dark shade outside of those areas. Chairperson, you would have noticed that the vice chairperson has come in. He will depart the scene. I move on to the analysis on registration. If you look at that analysis, right at the bottom, you will see that 63% of the registrations were women, 47% men generally. But you will see that persons under the age of 29 were 80% of the registration initiative. this South Africa must commend, because our young people are taking to this process as we would like them to do. This chairperson is just a summary of all of the statistics culminating in the total number of registered voters that we had over the registration weekend. You will know, chairperson, that in terms of new registrations and the new re-registrations, the numbers add up to 3.58 million. It means that in those 4 days, the 2 weekends, we have met and done business with people. But all in all, we, you know, these are the ones that have transacted. We have met with over 6 million people throughout the 2 registration weekends. I provide this map as an updated map, having a look at registration weekends. This is a map that has 257 blocks in it. Each one of those, well, not 257, it's 8 metro councils plus 205 local councils. These are shaded to show their strength of registration in each one of them. And the darker the shading, again, the higher the registration numbers. The lighter the shading, the less it is. There's some white shading in the middle there. Don't count it. It's useful too. And there's a part of Swaziland that is also excluded. You will notice that generally we have a darker map. We have more spots that are slightly dark than those that are more light. And this would bring quite a lot of satisfaction. Of course, we would like all of the set to be dark if we can. In terms of the registration of political parties, South Africa is a very active democracy. It has, as at the 13th of May, and it's important to bear that date in mind, registrations of political parties happen every day in our country. We register political parties at the Electoral Commission. We are the register of political parties in the country. And we had 357 parties registered as of the 13th of May. I say so because if you look at any gazette that is issued these days, you will find at least 3 parties that are advertising their intention to register as political parties. So by the time the elections are proclaimed and parties have to submit the list of candidates, that will be the date on which the numbers of political parties that will be eligible to contest elections will be known. For now, 200 of these 357 parties are registered in the National Sphere of Government, and 164 are registered in the Municipal Sphere of Government in the various provinces, 7 in the Eastern Cape, 6 in the Free State, and so on and so forth. It is particularly important, Chairperson, I point out that to you, that the Western Cape leads with 61 political parties. May I remind you that in the last election, the longest ballot paper in local government elections was the City of Cape Town. I think it had 27 parties, if I'm not mistaken. And it would appear that we are headed for the same. It was the longest by far. We've had other ballot papers elsewhere in the country with only 2 candidates, but in some more. But it's just Cape Town. Yes, of course, my dad doesn't remind me that when members seem worried, I must remind you that the DRC had 693 parties on the ballot. It was a book. We are sitting with. For us, this is important. It's a big thing. It does require special arrangements for us to print, because not every printer can print such a long ballot, and given the amount of security that we put around this. What is for us very interesting is that on this occasion, look at Limpopo. Limpopo follows the Western Cape with 30 political parties, and we are counting. That's very interesting. Of course, we then have KwaZulu-Natal and Mpumalanga with 14 parties each. If one looks at these elections in context, and you compare it to a similar election in 2011, in that election we had 121 political parties quite carefully the elections generally across the country. And we had 53,767 candidates in that election contesting 8,836 seats. That's what we had. So we thought that was very high. We'll have a look again. In terms of municipalities, I've indicated that in 2011 we had 238 municipalities. In 2016 we'll have 157. So we put one less category B municipalities, that is local councils. We had in 2011, which is what we currently have until election day, 4,377 wards. We now have 4,392 wards as from election day. We had confirmed the number of elections that we ran on election day in 2011, 8,882. We are anticipating, and I should make an asterisk there, we're anticipating around 9,041. I'll tell you why I say around 9,041. It is because MCs for local government in provinces must issue Section 18 notices, confirm the number of seats that they would have in their municipalities in their provinces. And we have half, just over half of them published. The other one is still going to be published, but it is expected that that number is going to be around 9,040. Could I give 100 this way? It should not be too far from that. In terms of stakeholder liaison, we have party liaison committees across all spheres of government. We have also extension invitations to hundreds of political parties. In other words, those parties that are not currently represented but are registered. We are holding sessions with them, we held sessions with them in every province, and we are now going to be holding sessions once more. Those sessions are fairly advanced as we speak. In relation to the department for contesting, ensuring that they understand what processes need to be undertaken on their part to contest in these elections. We also have ongoing participation in the joint structure. These are the security structures in the country. Any election is a matter of coordination with many stakeholders, and one of the most important partners, of course, would be the security structures. This is where threat assessment are looked at. This is where concerns in communities are known and how we deal with them. We take with you from there, and we use that information extensively in our planning processes. These joints are held at national level, at provincial level, and in municipalities where we have presence. We also have extensive consultations with stakeholders in the civil society organizations through a body we have worked through called the National Coordinating Forum, or NCF for short. And this is a body that has all of the major role players, and we meet with them in that structure. The last of these meetings was held last week. We have conflict resolution panels established. We've had them established for quite a while. They are working fairly well. They have made quite a number of remarkable interventions, and we hope that they continue to service our democracy as well as we anticipate them to. We have extensive communication on every aspect of the electoral process, and there is a lot of emphasis we are placing on the cut-off dates in respect of the submissions of the list of candidates. One of the things that is inevitable is that the law is clear. It provides for cut-off times, which are published in Gazette, and we communicate this to political parties and countries. And what does break our hearts from time to time is for us to send somebody away because they have come after the cut-off date. But this, we have no option but to enforce. And this is an area that we will talk about. We have good working relations with the Interministerial Committee on Elections. And, Chairperson, I do take it for granted, but we do not take it for granted, from where I come from, sometimes when we are here. There's a lot of work and support we get from this committee, and we're grateful for that. We We know the Department of Home Affairs, we haven't really said that yet, but you know, they have come to the party in a big way. They open on registration days, Saturdays and Sundays, for the duration of our opening of office. They check on us, we check on them, and everything that we need, and special things have to be said to them. They have ensured that voters have documents, even at short notice, and that really has helped our work extensively. So we do want to say thank you to yourselves as a person and your committee. We also want to indicate that we have extensive work that we have done with COPTA in the provinces at national level, and for that we are very grateful. Talking about recruitment and training of electoral staff, we have approximately 220,000 electoral staff members that we are recruiting and we train for this election. The number is slightly more than that. We will need about 220,000. But we do train more people, because inevitably the people you train, not all of them come and show up for the day of election. So we train more than we need and create a reserve pool from which to draw. Sometimes even that reserve pool is depleted on election day, and we have to, you know, work as we go and recruit others and train them as we go. This recruitment is at an advantage. Chairperson, the electoral commission has just over 1,000 people that work for them on a full-time basis. At a time of an election such as the one that we're going to have, inevitably we need to increase the capacity. We do bring on board a number of people, and in this respect, we have brought on board 407 assistant project coordinators. These are people that assist our communities at local, at municipal level. We often have very few people working there, so we have added those numbers by 407. We've also added 268 municipal outreach coordinators. In other words, in every municipality, we have somebody that ensures that we coordinate work that we do in outreach, that is communication, voter education, civic and democracy education, all of that work. In addition to this 268 people, we have 1,530 democracy education facilitators. These are looked at the size of the area they are covering and to the extent that they coordinate at work, we increase the numbers as may be appropriate. We've also had, in registration weekends, 52,170 people. In registration weekend one, these were the number of people that we had in the voting sessions. But given the issues that were raised by the Concord Mesa, as you will recall, going into the second registration weekend, we increased that number by exactly 50%. And so for registration weekend two, we had almost 25,000 people working with us. We did so to ensure that we could have a sufficient particularities of voters and ensure that we could share the numbers of people that we had. The chairperson was reminding me that it is important to indicate that these were not issues that we had planned to do. You know, as development came, we've had to prepare for this on the go. There is a substantial amount of money that this has entailed. And off the top of my head, chairperson, I seem to remember the number to be 22 million, but we can confirm that. I wanted to indicate that we have presiding and deputy presiding officers already recruited, and training is almost completed. The commission is minded, given the issues in the consultation that we had with the political parties, to say that although the recruitment of these persons has taken place with a due process that was suggested by political parties themselves and where objections were placed, perhaps at the appropriate time we may look at another window to say if there are persons that parties may wish to object to, we will be open to do so. It is important to say that the Commission is considering this because, as I indicate, that process is fairly well advanced. We have trained materials revised for training, and we are adopting a modular approach. In other words, we are looking at chunks of the work and training people as we go. This makes it easier to organize and emphasize each part of that training content.
And we are finding that there's enough time that we would have, and we can assess progress to training fairly accurately at you know, at each point. We have built risk management processes into the staff numbers per municipality. This is the process that I was talking to you concerning the management of our staff and ensuring that we have a requisite staff and in the requisite numbers. One of the things I've not pointed out is that Chairperson, we have 4,615 area managers. These are persons who, over and above our electoral project coordinators and our outreach coordinators, these are persons that look at all of the intricacies on registration day or on voting day and have a vehicle and can ensure a quicker turnaround time for troubleshooting. They, if you look at this, I indicated to you that we'll have 4,392 wards, but we have 4,615 of those. In some wards, we have two because of the distances. For example, in the Northern Cape, in a ward, you may, in fact, travel 100, 200 kilometers. And in those instances, we would ensure that they have more than one. So we are taking a lot of precaution and steps to ensure that we safeguard the process and that it is efficient. In relation to the proclamation of the election day, the Commission has gained consultation with the Minister responsible for culture, as it is required in law. Those consultations are indeed at an advanced stage, and we do think that proclamation is imminent. In the next 2 days, it can be expected that the Minister would proclaim the elections. Clearly, this is a matter that is for the Minister to deal with. It's not for the Commission. The Commission has to be satisfied that it has undertaken the consultations it needs to do with the Minister, and the Commission has done so. When the elections have been proclaimed, the voters' roll as a proclamation date will be used for elections. In other words, a proclamation date will close the voters' roll. By close of business that day, then the voters' roll will be the voters' roll as we would have for elections. In relation to the election timetable, and this you will find in as far as Schedule 3 to the Local Government Rules and Electoral Act 2000. And the electoral timetable will be drafted once proclamation has been issued. No members of the Commission in their conscience, the way in which they take this thing seriously, they are working on a draft already, anticipating this proclamation. And once that has happened, political parties will be called the following day. We will have a party liaison committee at national level, and we'll consult on that election timetable. Once we have consulted, we will then publish or gazette that timetable, which will then inform every activity in the election timetable from the date of proclamation to the date in which the elections will be held. In that timetable to be gazetted, we will include amongst us the opening of nominations of candidates, and consultations will have been concluded with the parties at the PLC. We'll also indicate dates on which the submission of list of candidates together with the requisite election deposits must be submitted to the Commission. We'll deal with the nomination of party or independent nominators of non-compliance regarding our training document. And, Chairperson, this is an important matter. You will recall that when we were proposing amendment and we came to this House and you assisted us extensively, this is an area that deals with where an independent or candidate or party candidate who appears on multiple parties will then be notified for the first time in our elections to the party concerned. We will do so by informing the nominator of that person. If it's an independent candidate, that independent candidate has a nominator. If it is a party, we will inform that nominator in the party that your candidate is standing for yourself and someone else or in another party list. And we will give parties, for the first time in our law, an opportunity to then reorder their list for make replacements This opportunity never existed before. That is now going to be in the election campaign. Secondly, we will also deal with the compilation of lists of parties contesting the election. We will certify those lists and provide every qualifying candidate with a certificate on a particular day. We will also deal in this election campaign with the opening of special votes applications, because at a certain point special votes will open. These are for home visits or for visits to the office of the presiding officer before election day. And we will deal also with the conducting of special votes at home as well as at the office of the presiding officer. We will also deal with issues relevant to election day. In terms of determinations that the Commission is called upon to do, quite a number are there, and the Commission has in fact progressed well to attain. But two of the specific ones that deserve mention here are the fact that the design of the ballot paper, the language to be used on that ballot paper, and the manner in which the ballot paper serves to be accounted for. And the Commission has determined, as it is required in terms of Section 23 and 24 of the Local Government Municipal Level Act. The Commission has also determined the voting hours in these elections in terms of Section 45 of the Local Government Municipal Electoral Act. Information and communication technology is central to the work that we do in our country. The registration of voters, it's you send that information you adopt it and you send it by ICT News. We do result in the same way and so on. So the only thing that one does manually is really the voting and the counting. And so we have to take extra measures to ensure that our ICT works as it should. What have we done in this regard? We have concluded the training to political parties on a new candidate nomination system. You will recall, Jefferson, that we have added to our current or former system of submission through forms and files, an electronic platform, which I must say to this House has received very good reception. 19 political parties so far have indicated that will be submitting their nominations by electronic means. As we see today, they have access to the system and they have been, feeding it with data. This is not the submission itself, because the submission will begin on the date after which elections have been called. In other words, once proclamation has been heard and the date on which the submission of lists of candidates is open, then the parties will then submit practically on the system from that day. We have drills being undertaken to test our disaster recovery plans. This is a matter that Chairperson, I would not want to speak into too in detail, in that it is a security matter. But we want to indicate to you that we take extra measures to ensure our ICT platforms. We have disaster recovery platforms, not one. I won't indicate how many, but it's more than one, and we operate, we test them systematically as we go. We do this in the event that our main center is, for whatever reason, is disrupted, so that we seamlessly then operate a secondary disaster recovery site. And if that one is off, we'll operate a further site that we create for the service. The result systems, which are an integral part of this work that we do, are currently undergoing independent audits. We are expecting that process will be concluded very early in the next month. Typically what happens is that political parties would know the law. The law prescribes how we process results, how we determine seats, and so on and so forth. We build this process into our electronic systems. We develop, we put out the specification on what those systems should do, how they should do it, and we provide that once the system has been developed to political parties to look at the system, to test that system, and be sure that it is indeed producing that which it is expected to produce. we give or we do tender for a professional audit service where a firm of auditors will come and audit that, who are IT auditors, they'll audit that system and ensure that they are satisfied that it is fit for the purpose for which it was designed. Once they have issued that certificate, we will take that certificate, give it to the political parties. They will see if there are any problems with the system. They will satisfy themselves if there are no problems with the system. But typically, we will not get the outcome from the audit firm unless every box is ticked. In other words, if they find an error, they draw it to our attention, we fix it, and they test until they find no error in the system, and then they issue a certificate. That certificate is given to political parties. They are invited within a window period, which is fairly limited, for risk purposes as well. It's limited. With that certificate, they may bring their IT auditors and test the system themselves. Once they're satisfied, we then close our system. It is then ready for us to use on election day. There is another process, though, that we do undertake. Political parties, once they have tested that, we do have what we call a dry run, or dry runs, where all of our offices that manage election processes, that either see the results, they capture those results, those that find that there are exceptions that need to be managed, where there are issues that need to be attended to, as would be the case in election day, we simulate that day well in advance of an election and within a given time period. And typically, Chairperson, what we do on that day, we will use the system to produce results lists as if they were produced at a voting station. They will then be captured by people sitting in those offices, 257 offices at least in this instance, and they will receive the results as if they come from their voting stations. They'll capture them. The system in that time period will be tested for pressure and for accuracy and for the staff to say they know what is to be expected. And then we look at the outcome of that process. Where we are satisfied, we will then pass the thing. But we like to do it more than once. 9 out of 10, we do find that there are certain things that we can do better. We then use a second process to do so. We do so with the necessary knowledge of the parties. So these are some of the many, many initiatives, Chairperson, that we take in preparing. In respect of conditions for free and fair elections, the Electoral Commission has taken enormous amount of measures at a great cost to the fiscus to ensure the integrity of elections. The first thing that we must be grateful about is that the Electoral Amendment Act was passed on the 18th of March, and we have now passed the regulations and perfected those into our training materials. Measures have been taken to strengthen the role of party agents, as you know. This is a process that was built into the Electoral Amendment Act. It is now passed, and those measures have been taken. We have invited political parties. When we train our own staff, we've invited political parties to send our party agents to be trained with our staff. This is important because nothing that we tell our staff should be hidden away from political party agents. They need to know what our staff are doing, and they need to know what it is that they are monitoring as they sit out in the basis. They also need to know that they should not do, which our staff need to do, and vice versa. So this opportunity has been created. Political parties have had the invitation to send their people. We must admit, Chairperson, that invitation has not been taken up greatly. There are parties here and there that have taken advantage of that. And I must admit, it is at no cost to political parties. We've also taken measures to ensure that every voting station will be open in the morning at 7, and at the time of closing, that voting station will then be converted into a country center. It's just impossible. That doesn't change in any way. The only thing that happens is that the doors are closed. Party agents and whatever's present at the voting station will then be required to stay in the room until the results for that voting position has been determined, the presiding officer will then record the results on the result slips, having gone through a due process of counting, going through a process where every ballot will be shown and put up in a pile to say this is a pile for party one, that's a pile for party two, that's a pile for party three. Having shown every one of those ballots to persons that are present. Once that has happened, those piles will then be counted and tallied, and then the results will be filled. The process from there is that the party agents, the presiding officer must fill in a result slip, sign it, and give an opportunity to party agents to do so. It is so that party agents are not forced, or observers are not forced to sign the result slip. But it is our wish, and we in our training, this is a matter we've been emphasizing, to say party agents present at the voting station, our wish and request is that they sign those result slips, each one of them. And we are asking political parties to help us and be vigilant just so that we do this. Once that is done, the result, a copy is pasted on the notice board of the window or the door of that voting station. The other copy that's going to be captured is still in a tamper-proof, transparent envelope. It's a plastic bag, a tough plastic bag shield, and it is escorted by the local police to the office of the municipal electoral officer, where there are party agents present for the capturing of that. And there we have yet another set of independent auditors that will be auditing the results at that level. In every area where we capture results, there will be a professional audit firm that has persons that look at the result slips as they were received from the voting stations and ensure that what we have counted into our system actually matches that result slip as well. And yet another measure to ensure that we capture correct and we will do so. Once that has happened, the result slips are scanned into our systems and the parties at the result centers throughout the country will have a copy that has now been scanned and is now a soft copy available for every voting station. And when you call that copy up per voting station, it will show you the results as were hand-filled by the presiding officers and hopefully signed by every party agent at the voting station against the results as captured on the system. And here, Chairperson, there should not be any difference. What has been captured? What is on the results list should be the same. Anyone, it doesn't have to be a political party, anyone that finds that there's a discrepancy is free to bring that to our attention. And political parties know that this is a measure that is available to them, and we do appreciate it. Literally, anyone, anywhere in the world where they have access to the internet can look at those results and can bring to our attention any error that we may have. We're not saying that there will not be a single error, but we are saying that every measure that we need to take to be transparent will be taken as we have done in this respect. Chairperson, in respect of the Constitutional Court matter, this is all we can say at the moment, that the Electoral Court looked at a CAM matter in February this year and made a determination. In that determination, the Commission thought it prudent to clarify a number of issues. And there were three issues, broadly speaking, which were for clarity. This was not a fine or anything. It was to say, here is an order that we would be happy to understand the implications and let's approach the Constitutional Court and clarify. One was clarity sought in respect of whether the absence of a voter's address in the voter's roll invalidates the voter's roll. This was for us very important because we had more voters on the voter's roll that did not have this than the ones that had addresses. The second issue we wanted to clarify was what the terms where such addresses are available, what those terms mean in relation to Section 16 of the Electoral Act 1998. And thirdly, we wanted to understand what did the Constitutional Court mean in terms of its order when it refers to the prospective application of the order in the cabinet. The commission did not do this because, you know, the commission was seriously seeking to ensure that it undertakes its role, in absolute compliance with the law. There was no malafide, there was no contestation. It was to see clarity on those issues. As we know, the Constitutional Court had this matter on Monday, the 9th of May 2016, and judgment in that matter is reserved, as the chairperson has indicated. If one looks at this matter and what it meant in context, you will see that the voters' roll before the matter went to court has 24,994,000 people. The ones that had complete addresses were 35%, more or less, and the ones that had partial or no address were 55%. You will now, this, I hope, will give you a context sufficient why the Commission approached the court to clarify the matter. Where we are now, the situation has changed quite a bit, but it's not resolved altogether. We now have 26.3 million people. We've had the benefit of two registration meetings. We now potentially, and we say potentially, have about 54% of voters with some addresses, which are seen to us like with their final. I say so because we are, as we speak, working very hard to ensure that we capture whatever addresses that we were able to get before proclamation day. 46% of the states still seem like a situation we do not have under control. We have a contact center. It is a facility that we use for social media contact with the Electoral Commission, for telephone contacts, for people that send faxes. Some people, I'm told these days, even send messages to say, please call me back to those facilities, and our colleagues at that facility are dealing with those. This center is open from 7 in the morning to 9 at night, weekdays. We use all of the languages in the country, and this service has been available since the 9th of November. We have included quite a number of platforms, Twitter, Facebook, website, and email since January this year. Chairperson, I have shared this. It's by no means everything that we do, but we thought for the purpose of our briefing to yourselves. This is what we should say for now. And I'm sure we will take questions. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And but I did ask about the state of one.
Yes.
If it remains as is now, we decided that we are going back to the court. What threat are you raising? And then, if ever there is any, and what kind of vigilance that the IC will have to manage that? Of course, is that currently we don't really have the outcome. We would like to have the situation corrected, that elections happen across through to July. As if nothing has happened. But we know that there is a challenge, and it looks like that challenge it may have some sort of impact. Is the IEC alive to proactive measures if such a thing happens, especially, you know, on a later date that is close to the time that there's nothing that you can do? But of course, that we may not really need an answer now, because the situation has not developed to its final. But the only issue is to have the IEC alive to that situation. That if it succeeds as it is, because now it has come, but the problem they had has not been moved. It is still hanging around there. And I think we really need to thank the presentation that has been made. There has been a very, very extensive. And honorable members, we will need to engage now the report. And honorable members from COSTA, you have the freedom to ask as well and add quite a serious blow to this discussion, because all of us have got interest that the elections must be free and fair. And therefore, all sorts of things that may impact on the elections, let's raise them, let's see that, whether they can be corrected, whether the IEC can be allowed to rest so that we don't find ourselves clashing the other side. But I think we need to make one thing very clear. The quality of input that political parties and student society will make into this election will lead to the quality of the outcome of the election. I'm calling out, then you can raise any point and then add the IEC in the response, then we'll also pick up on other things that we need to pick up. I'm calling out a version in the country. Then it's a word of yes,
General. I'm looking at your last graph, the 65% that might be affected. But I still don't understand why IEC decided or thought that this 65% which might be affected can be affected in the court application. Because for me, this matter should have been dealt with separately. Why do you think this 65 form part of your application to court instead of submitting a separate matter altogether?
Okay.
And I will also appreciate the linkage thereof of the waiting judgment first.
Thank you very much, Honorable Sophie.
Yabonga, CEO, for the presentation, which is very clear. But I just want to join my colleague here. Which is this Concord judgment, that is what it is. It's a worrisome. So we just want to hear from the IEC, which is, what if the Concord ruled against you? Are we going to continue with elections? With this number of people who's not going to participate in elections, is not going to cause a riot in the country? What is your plan in place? It's well and good that your plans to have elections, of which we all want to have free and fair elections as political parties. And that's why they come to this court, because of the very same reason that we all as South Africans, especially political parties, want free and fair elections. Why in this mess, I even said this before, so why in this mess, if other political parties didn't bust people, would even come, would not have IEC to court. But here now, since this is a court case, and then the judgment is reserved, what is the plan? Are we going to continue with elections? Or IEC is prepared to exclude those people who didn't provide those addresses as per the court ruling it might be? The second thing on the same breath, I just want to get a plan from the IEC, which again, let's say there's no court that is pending. What is your plan? When do you go and verify the addresses? Because I will tell you, even the chair knows that during the voter registration, when you're visiting the voting station, in other voting stations, the presiding officers were not even emphasizing on the issue of addresses. The person was just go there and register without being asked to where you stay, can you verify your address and so on. So I just want to get your own plan there. Let alone about this court case. I think I'm covered by the chair in the case of Wani, because as we can hear, the House of sitting as well, is debating on the issue. If you remember, Chair, through to Chair, the chair of the IEC, is not in Wani. There are other pockets of areas. In the last registration, there were some pockets of areas where people didn't want to go and register, citing the very first fact that they don't want to be taken from this VD to another VD. So how do we deal with the situation? Because lucky enough is that the voter registration was 2 days. The first day they didn't continue in one of the, I think it's in Gauteng, but on the second day, IEC came with a plan. And then they went to the subs and people were managed to go and register there. So now the voting day is only 1 day. How are we going to deal with this situation? That's two. The last one, I just want to get clarity on this same video. It says you have a table that specifies that people who are going to start on the same video and pay that only 650. I just want to get a clarity. 650 on one video, how does it work? Because you are saying one free and fair. Why is it in a way in Tanga? 650 on the same video registration. What does it mean? I just want to get that clarity before we go to court today. About the 250 VT in Ghana. Take your chair.
Okay. As you go to the figure.
Thank you very much, Jefferson, and thank you to ICF here for the presentation. I think we bring us the same question, because it really was that last day as the last page that you gave to a 35%. Now, before you become a voter, you fill in a form to register in the IEC with the address and everything. What happened to that information? Was there any incident that happened? Maybe you lost the information or the building was on fire. That's the first question, because really this is worrying to see that only 35% of the people, the voters, they got addresses. Now, the other issue that I want to raise on the second voter's registration, in my conscience, I wanted to say to the CEO that you can make an example about Western Cape, because in my conscience, the VG that I have to drive 2 hours to get to the VG in the funds, that is in service. Now, I had one problem when I was doing oversight on the registration day. Maybe this will kick also into the question that why we're using SATU as managers to manage the elections or the voters' registration. I have said one city in Hamlet where I was questioned, why are you doing the visiting? I said, I'm doing my oversight. My portfolio also includes IC. Then the gentleman just looked at my card and said, no, you represent Home Affairs. I say, Home Affairs IEC is one of us, so I have to do the oversight. He didn't allow me, he didn't even answer my questions, because I wanted to find out if are there any problems with the issue of addresses, do people give you addresses and all that. So we end up starting to quarrel, as, okay, I'll leave you alone. So I wanted to look at that, because we spend a lot of money in training. Now, if we're going to have politicians as the officials, then the end of the day, this election won't be free and fair. The other question I want to ask is about the county. I believe you say where you voted, the VD will also do the county. There are temporary VDs where you're using pens. I'm also going to use those pens as a counting station. Now, there are more times that we reported that ballot papers have been moved or ballot boxes have been moved to another center where you have to count. Is this a guarantee that we have to count in the VG? Okay. Now, according to the judgment, I see the judgment is set aside. I think that is the same question my colleague has asked. Have we got plan B? If anything happens in court and say we can't go on with the elections, what is our plan B as IEC? Thank you very much, Jefferson.
Thank you very much, Tatima Sondo and Tatima Sibe. Do you have anything, sorry?
Yes, Chair. The question. How does it happen that the people who stay in the same locality, such as the old age center, who have registered in the preceding 2 registration periods, when they go back and inquire as to whether their things are okay with the local IEC, they are told that no, your address is wrong, and yet they use the same address. That's a question that I want honorable members to. The second thing is that people come into South Africa on observer mission. Why aren't they, for a change, deployed outside in the most rural areas, because they are always deployed in the cities, where, you know, conditions are relatively less risky than in the most areas of this country? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairperson. Just one question, really. That is, that's an explanation of something that is in the documents. If you look at the document in the car, the pie chart there, that's at the end, speaks about pre-registration figures, and the percentages that are used is 55% versus 35%, but 35% is also 5%. And in addition to the current vote as well, this document compares two figures, and these are 41% and 59%.
Thank you very much. Megan.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for the presentation, sir. I think also to add on the question of addresses, do you think when you are talking about the IC SLS number, for example, that 3218. Do you think that number is still relevant if we are talking about the addresses? Because when you make that SLS, you just get a report that you are in this particular voting station. But then, how do you make sure that you make a follow-up for the address thereof? Secondly, this election has not yet been proclaimed. Is there any outstanding issues not talking about this question, but that's just to know what are the attending issues. My third question is on the issue of increase of registration on the 20 to 39 age old. Yes, it's commendable. As much as I know that as political parties, it's our obligation to see that they grow and actually vote. What is your strategy as ICC? Noting that you say that you've got an outreach program of these coordinators, but it's also to see that they really vote. Because sometimes maybe they are just excited because they are youngsters. Then they won't vote on the voting day. What can you do also to ask these political parties to see that they really go and vote? On education, how political voters have been reduced in social media. Potential, how many potential voters have been reduced to social media in the figures you have got? Thank you very much.
Mamlis.
Thank you very much, Chair. the chairperson of the IEC have made mention of the fact that all the 13 parties were present as they were signing the code of conduct. Then how are we going to monitor on the ground if the code of conduct is followed to the latter? And what are the consequences thereof for those who will not play by the rules? As you may know that Bakona Yonkindawo Undabiayona, Bazobenzi Wanjara. And my other question, Chairperson, is I need clarity from the IEE, if there are any special plans for our people in rural areas, proactive measures to assist our people from rural areas, whereby others, as we know, have to cross the rivers to reach IEC offices. Let's assume maybe it rains on the day of election. Are you ready for that? Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, and Dr. Oblan.
Thank you very much, Chair. Just two issues from my side. Firstly, I like the analogy that the Chairperson of the Commission made about the IEC as a referee in a game, which the game is going to be the cup final. But you know, a referee has got certain responsibilities and certain powers in the game. You can issue a yellow card, which is a warning,
he can also issue a red card. Now, the finding of the code of conduct, for me, I don't think it's just symbolic. It should also represent commitment by parties to play by the rules. And as a referee in a game, we should be able to enforce that, meaning that at a particular point when somebody does not play by the rules, you should be able to issue a red card. If that action warrants a red card, of course. I just want to check the commitment of IEC to fully implement that code of conduct that has been signed and the pledges that have been made by different parties. The second point that I have is really on the constitutional court matter, which we know that it is sub judice. But say there was no constitutional court case pending. What would have been the commitment of the commission to get all the addresses to be on the voters' roll? So meaning that at what particular point are we going to, or the IEC is going to make sure that all the voters have got their voting, their addresses. Of course, taking into account the fact that some of our people don't really have addresses. If you stay in Mandela Park somewhere, that place is not proclaimed, it's not a proclaimed township, and therefore there is no address. But there should be a particular way in which the IEC should be able to get the addresses of the people. So I would like to find out the timelines and the commitment to get the voters rolling with all the addresses.
Thank you very much, Mayor.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I think I'm very worried, especially with the paragraph. 65% is not even half. And when you state that partial, meaning that the partial is partial or no address. Meaning there are those who are having addresses or not having addresses in that 65. So are we going to go to the voters? Or are we going to go to the polls? We have an alarming number. It's very worrying. And what is IEC going to do with such figures? It's not even half, you said it's about 26 million people who are supposed to go to the voters' roll. So what is the 65% of that 26 million? It's not even half the half of the voters. It is, so are we going to go with the election numbers? I'm worried, Chef. It's really worrying. So there is no fair and free and fair and credible here. So I think yes, I have to assist us. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Firstly, let me say that I am generally impressed. The IEC has done a wonderful job. However, there are areas where one can question what is happening. But perhaps the areas that I'm mostly impressed about are, one, that the critical element of voting agents for the political party agents, these are going to be trained together with the staff, which makes running the station with much less conflict and much more effective reliability. Secondly, the issue of the recovery plans. Given the cyberspace threats and risks, I think this is a very much welcome move from
the IEC, particularly because we are not having only one disaster recovery center. Thirdly, the issue of stakeholder contact, stakeholder engagement, I think up to so far has gone very much well, and then perhaps it gives us hope that we are going to have an election where everyone has agreed to the processes and as to how things are going to be done in order to make the elections free and fair. This is assisted by the runs that the department is undergoing, and I think all the agents have been empowered from the different political parties, the ones with more resources and the ones with less resources. But some areas raise some questions. One, we say that the voting districts have increased by 2%, but now the critical resource we reduced, that is in the form of staff. So we have more places to work and less staff members. That's if you could clarify that. And then do you have an increase in the number of sites and a reduction in the number of personnel? Generally, the other questions then have been asked. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Madam Dow.
Chairperson, allow me also to welcome this wonderful report that you created by the IEC for us. It's a wonderful job that you've done. I know, Chairperson, that most of the parties are going to teach their voters to vote. I'm also surprised the IEC, they must also use the media to train people to vote. They mustn't take for granted that people they know how to vote. Because now we are going for local elections. I think that's my comment, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone that still has an issue that has not been raised that you hope that other members will raise on your behalf?
Chair. Thanks, Chair, sorry to come back for a second time. The voter registration week, I'm just checking, Chair, if the court case goes otherwise, will they open up another weekend for voter registration so that we can rectify what need to be rectified? And the shortage of paper, normally shortage of material on election day, which results in people being moved around to voting stations that are not belonging, that are not supposed to be voting to. I think if they can take care of that.
Okay. Thank you very much, honorable members, for those issues that have been raised to ensure that the validity of this engagement is raised. I think in the response that the IEC will come up, and then I'll tell you the only two points to be covered. One is just to try to inform us what is the latest day for the proclamation, such that your timetable towards the 3rd of August is not completed. I think that is the first one. The second one is you engage political parties at the level of the political party liaison, whatever the talk. What are the hot issues that you have discussed, I think? Have you managed to find some sort of agreement with political parties, or are there issues that still remain that may say threaten their cooperation within the election? I think those are the two issues that I would like to raise. But honorable members, especially in relation to the court cases and addresses, you will understand that there may be certain things that they may not speak because of that subject. I understand that the manner in which you have said the question is opposed no court case, but we know that there is a court case. Therefore, the letter is up to the state. No matter we try to get that, you find the answer, you know, it's the way around it. And then, but let us just understand that the possibilities that they may be found wanting if they actually does in that. I think we may agree that just after the court has ruled, we may seek an opportunity now to ask the IEC what is next. Probably at that time, then I think they should be able to then ask, this is the situation, this is how we think we are going to deal with this matter. You know, it's a question of disenfranchising people, that the court rules otherwise and all that. Then I think they'll be able to actually come and testify us how they move forward when there is an outcome of that particular case. At the moment, there will definitely be temporary. The case that we are awaiting an outcome in the court of law. And I think I just needed to say that. Also, of course, is that you see, it is a little bit a difficult issue that when a ward is removed from one municipality to another, then the people in that ward then will need to re-register because almost all the details changes. So the voting district numbers are all different. When a voting district moves from one ward to the other, then you have got all sorts of problems that arise. And the IEC, you heard us, your responses.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, honorable members, for such in-depth engagement with us as the Commission, and we will endeavor to respond and clarify matters to the extent that we do not cross the line. And as the Chairperson has pointed out, we are very much mindful that matters that are before the Concord are subjugated, and we will be most appreciative that we can deal with those matters when the judgment is on the table. And this is not to say we don't have any plans and views on the matters. In fact, our position and our perspective has been shared with the committee members before we went to court. So we will really appreciate it. Now, we are a team here, and I'm glad that the Vice Chair has also joined us. We would actually allocate the different questions to each other. As it always the case, at school, the teacher will always say, one times two is two, and then come to you and say, seven times 11, or seven times nine, and ask the students. So I think I would take the one times two questions, and my vice chair and the CEO will take the other ones. But this is really because, one, the vice chairperson is the chairperson of the electoral management subcommittee of the commission, and therefore it is in the center, in the driver of this work, and is our veteran in the election matters. And secondly, the CEO, who has prepared a comprehensive report that has been shared with yourselves. And the questions that I will start with, firstly, is the comments that were made by the Honorable Mitao and regarding the issue of the training of the people using what we call the media in ensuring that our people do understand the policy. I will assure the Honorable Members that there are ongoing voter education activities, and these are targeted to also include people with disabilities, the aged people, and other various communities that require or need some special attention. But overall,
voter education be a continuous process, because every year, as you've seen in the stats that we're showing today, there are more and more new voters that are coming through. In fact, you know, somebody once wrote a book, How to Lie with Statistics. In fact, if we were to look at the stats that are on the table here, there is a commendable achievement that was accomplished by the Electoral Commission in the last two legislations since the inception of this institution. We had, as the other question was asked, in terms of the numbers, with 6.5 million South Africans responding to the Electoral Commission to update their voting details, or to verify if the details that they have are still correct. Indications that we are a mobile society. People are changing and are moving addresses, whether it's work, whether it's marital purposes, or whether it is for study purposes. That's why every election is preceded by a voter registration activity. As much as it is a very expensive activity, average it costs about 300 million per registration weekend. It takes us about 600 million. But this is part of what the Commission has always done. We also like to go to honorable members that, in fact, registration is open throughout the year. People can walk in the local municipal office and vote and register. The drive is just to ensure that we are seeking. And in this round, we had 6.5 million people that came through. In previous years, if we had measured 1 million plus, 1 million and 200, would have been the maximum. So it's a commendable work that took place, and that was achieved. And we as the Commission, we are proud of that achievement. And the other question and the comments that were made by Honorable Kumete, we thank you, sir, for your acknowledgement of, again, the work that has been done by our institution. We remain committed to our mission statements that we want to remain the preeminent electoral institution, not only in the continent, but by any world standard. And we remain so as an institution and as a country. We should be proud of that achievement. The issues of the party agents and their training. This is an important point, part, because one wants to underpin this, that the integrity of the election is not just one component. It is a continuum of multi-layered activities that the Commission has to prepare, and also the partnership with the political parties as well as the community. So in that respect, we continue to endeavor and strive for the highest standards of understanding of the rules of the game, of professionalism, of adherence to the rules. But of course, the nature of this work is a complex, intricate operation. The only equivalent to an election, honestly, Chairperson, is probably when you are deploying a war. Now, here we are dealing with a complex program project management activities. And this institution, which is the homegrown, the product of the child, of the children of this soil, remains one of the most distinguished institutions with the kind of that capability. The training of the party agents at the same time with the motivation staff is not simple. We're talking over 22,000 voting districts, and we're talking 250,000 people that you employ for no more than probably 5 working days. You train them on that short period of time, and those particular individuals, they come with different levels of competencies and skills, but still they endeavor to do the best. But in that process, there's nobody who can just stand in front of the people of South Africa and say, I guarantee.
it is tantamount to that the head, the Minister of Education can guarantee that every teacher will not transgress certain rules. But what we as the Commission committed is a transparency to the rules. We are committed in ensuring that every person that is involved in the organization is vetted at the local level through the party political license system. If there are objections on case-by-case basis, we invite the local parties that best deal with those individuals. Generalization is sufficient to create the rules and the framework, but the devil is in the detail. And we welcome those particular incidences and matters that would then arise. So when we train the party agents at the same time and we invite political parties, it is because we want that the agents as well as our staff, they actually come from the same rules book. And this is the check and balance of our system. And part of the, what you call, the stakeholder management has exactly been actually trying to ensure that we do build and a common understanding also with all the stakeholders. Unprecedented, we've had actually engagement at party liaison, not only with representatives of the political parties, but also we have had extended party political liaison with each leader and members of the leadership of each party to try and close those particular gaps. And so what Mr. Kumet, Honorable Kumet was saying, are part of the thing that from our side, we're saying we will continue those stakeholder management and engagement. And with regards to security measures, once more again, we have put all the measures, but if there are any further suggestions, we are open to those particular measures. Now, there is the point that Honorable Rapoti also pointed out, and I will invite both the chairperson, the vice chairperson, and the CEO to note that if there's anything I left out, to actually share with us. But what we are saying is that when we were looking at the voters' role and we analyzed and broke it down, the voters' role indicated that one third of the people that were enrolled had the addresses. The other one third had no address. The other one that had some form of address, but the court had found that that is generic. And now we then engage this also with the statistician general, as well as the surveyor general of the country. What it has been indicated is that we as a landscaping country, and it's not the making of anybody, as a country, we have a mix of a developed nation and developing part of the world. 8 million of the dwellings in this country do not have an address. And that is just the fact of our country. If you're saying to have a car road, not every village has a car road. But there might be some streets of some sort. And this is where we are talking about finding landmarks, which we did share with the community. That's what we are using, and that's what we hope will assist in the process. Now, the matter that is before the court is precisely the plan of the commission to say, in light of the different interpretations, we need one particular clear order, and it is that order that we will then assist in. And that is the plan. Anything hypothetical or otherwise would take us into the realm of actually discussing a matter that is sub judice. But what we have indicated is that those particular people with or without their addresses, to the best and the extent that we have been able to, we try to locate them within those particular VDs that they indicate that they live in. And if we submit to the chair that we are of the view that to a large extent those particular indications, save for situations that had been identified. By and large, people have indicated that they live within those LVDs. But the matter we have now put before the court, let wait for the, what you call the outcome, and then we'll take the matters forward. There was Honorable Mapulan questions that related largely to plans to enforce the code of conduct, and I'll invite our vice chair to respond to that. And then the issues of special plans to assist people in the rural areas, the CEO, and the issues related to the monitoring of the code of conduct. Please, Vice Chair, if you could assist with those questions from Honorable Kanye. The issue of the SMS, I think Honorable Member have already indicated that we managed to get 6.5 million people, and this was really because we have done unprecedented work. One of those things, we had sent almost 5 million SMSs to people to update the details. The other part of this, we had an unprecedented in the continent, a partnership with Facebook, where now we were able to get the young people through the medium that they are familiar with. To actually interface with the Commission, and the results that we have received have spoken for themselves. In the liaison, again, as to whether are there any outstanding issues, there are continuous engagements with political parties. Some matters we implement, other matters we are actually in discussions, and as we speak, there is what we call a comprehensive draft that the Commission is looking at to finalize in terms of the response to some of the matters that were raised with the Commission around the election through our party liaison with the special engagement with the leaders. But I would like to just indicate to the Chair that some of those issues, and even most of them, we have found that some of them had been matters that had been resolved and agreed to through the political party liaison where representatives of political parties sit. And now we have noticed there is a gap in some respects where the representatives of political parties at that level have agreed and signed and resolved matters with the commission, with the Federal Commission personnel. And those matters were brought to the Commission on the understanding that had been agreed to. And then the next thing, you then engage the leaders, you find that there is a gap. And we're still working to say, how can we close that particular gap? So that we can reach optimum consensus. Of course, as we would say in Zulu, Randa Bainaman, Dengaman, there would be those matters where we don't see eye to eye. And as a commission, we will make that, but having endeavored first and foremost to reach sufficient consensus on those particular matters. I think I've responded to those matters. And with respect to Honorable Masondo's registration, figures and clarity, CEO would actually also address those matters. And also with respect to Honorable Madibe, how that the same people in the old age find that they, what you call, they are not on the roll and not they are in the roll. There's something that sometimes one feels that we speak across purposes as South Africans. There are three categories of the voters' roll data. The first category is that one of 1998 and 1999. We don't count 1994 because there was no voters' roll. 1998 elections were based on the voters' roll that was compiled in three phases. On the 5th of November, we had 9 million people on the roll.
The second registration round was in February. We netted another 4.5 people. And the final in the sweeping and in 1999 was in March, and that was another 4.5. That gave us what we have, 18 million. And at that time, the Electoral Act had no provision for the requirement of an address. The law said you needed two things to be on the roll. You have to be South African, and you have to have an ID. And those of us will remember that the ensuing debate was which ID. And in the end, we concluded that the barcoded ID is the one to be used, because the country had a number of IDs, former homeland, IDs for different racial groupings and all of that. And some of those IDs were not linked to the population register, which is with the Home Affairs. And the only ID that was linked to the Home Affairs was the Donbass. And that also moved into the new ID. That's why the call was for, we need a barcode, because the AED, as soon as the person says, I'm coming on the road, we were then able, in cooperation with the Home Affairs, to link up and check those people and verify whether they are in the road or they are not in the road. But at that time, there was no requirement for an address. In 2003, the Parliament moved to amend the law to say we need the address. And then in November last year, and it said to have an address where available. And then last year, the finding was that that address must be, that the commission needs to ensure that there is an address. And that's the matter now we've taken to the Concord to say, we are proposing a plan to address this thing once and for all. And so that's really the situation. So when we talk about the addresses and the numbers of having voted or having numbers or not, is based on that. And where the court says it is generic, is a situation where a person lives in a village, and this particular person in that village, they only have a post box, they've got a local chief, there's a river, but there isn't a dwelling address. And that's what we're working also at the inter-ministerial level now with SFSA and all of the parties to say, let's find a way either to have an address or to have what the statistician general says would be an identifier of a person, because you also have people in the rural areas who don't have addresses, but you also have people in the urban areas who are living in informal settlements. And those, as we all know, they mushroom every day. But those people have what you call, they are South African citizens, and they do have a right. So we are managing all of those things. That's why we're talking about part of this having certain complexity involved. I will also ask my fellow CEO to respond to the issue of the deployment of observers, both domestic and international. And then when it comes to some of the matters Honorable Finante raised, which is what happened to the voters' details when they registered. As indicated, in the first batch, which was 18 million, the majority of the votes, there was no requirement for the address, and that deals with that matter. And in the subsequent, registration, our report indicates the number of participants. If you recall, there were no municipalities. At the time we had municipalities, some of them, I can recall where, when we were setting up the commission, they were actually sitting in makeshift offices. I walked in at the moment and found our staff members in a small corner in the offices. It was raining, everything, trying to capture. We have evolved. Some of that data was captured. Some of the information was not eligible enough. Some of it had situations where municipalities had rains, there were fires. The number of factors that had affected where we come from to where today we are. And And then there was the question of the visiting a the way there were some problems when you go into a specific region. With respect to that, I think those matters, we can direct them straight to our CEO and staff members, and we quite had even previously there were, through your chair, other members that we correspond. We then look at case by case and it helps all the parties. And that's what we also invite, that those matters be drawn to our attention so that we can deal with them on the spot. The Honorable Sope would be my witness to that effect, that as matters were raised wherever she walked, those matters were attended to the best of our ability on the turnaround time was as reasonable as possible, and to the extent that she would agree. And then we have the issue of the counting and the movement of the ballot papers. Again, there's part of that, the checks and balances of the system. I'd like that the CEO will actually walk us through comprehensively in terms of that. But as a principle, you vote where you're registered. Secondly, you count before the voting station. After the voting station has been closed, and all the parties, and that's why we're urging, the presiding officer must sign the results, and the party agents must sign the results, so that there's check and balance on the spot, and further, that this must then be posted at the door, so that members of the public in that area, they know what is the outcome. By the time this is captured and the process of the verification and audit and all those things, political parties, by and large, those who have deployed in the VDs where they are representatives, they already know what is the outcome. So that's why we have an unverified result, and then after the due process, we have a final verification. So, but the issue of whether the counting can move from one station and all that, our CEO would actually be able to share with us. Matters that were raised by Honorable Sope regarding what if the court rules in a particular way, will we have an election? We have emphatically stated one thing as the Commission. The Constitution of the Council says from the agent to the 15th of August, that's a 90-day window that elections must have been conducted and results done. We are committed to that. Whatever the order is, we will implement the order of the Supreme Court. What? The implications would be that the country has met the constitutional requirements. Now, anything else we would say, can we discuss that outcome when we know what it is? But the plan is that we are planning that we will hold the election on the day, and the proclamation will be made by the minister very soon in consultation with the Commission. I will invite the CEO on the 616 question regarding the people who were registered in Ghana. And then we also had the matters that were raised by the Honorable Chair. The situation in Vuwani, the CEO and the Vice Chair, who has visited the area, would share with us our understanding of the situation in that area. We also have, with respect to the question of or the possibility of another round of registration, the registration is ongoing. As we speak, people can go to the municipalities. But the weekend registrations, financially, it's not possible. And besides, we have exhausted the resources. We will be hammered by this committee and SCOPA because we don't have the budget for registration any further, as indicated each registration costs about 200 million, 600 million is gone. So we are urging people and we and appeal to yourselves as leaders to encourage people to still go to the municipalities to update the details. But we would keep our eyes open to the circumstances on exceptional basis where there might be a need for some kind of a targeted registration for whatever reason that may arise between now and the proclamation. Issue arising. Yes, the issues I touched a little bit. There were matters that were raised between ourselves and the leaders of the political parties, but I think it actually starts with that to indicate that in some respects some of those matters had been dealt with, and there's still some of the matters that had not been dealt with. And one of the issues that we are hoping we should find a meeting of minds is around the personnel that is employed, the issue of the teachers and all of that. And that's probably one of the areas where we still have what you call divergences of views. Say for that, the Commission has also put across that from its side is that it is firmly committed, and it has listened, it's firmly committed that over a period of time we will address all the concerns. So the issue might be the timing and where we are as we speak, and the commitments in some respects that have already been made, because we have recruited on the understanding of the resolutions that were made by the PLC. So that's the way these matters are. Chairperson, I would like now to ask my colleague, the CEO, to respond to the questions that I pointed out, and then finally our vice chairperson to do the sweeping. I thought it would be better if you complete, and then vice chair to do the sweeping. Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much. I think I'm going to start with the last ones first, and I'll progressively come through to the ones that we're dealt with.
If it is about you, allow me to remove the jacket.
Yeah, not sure. I will do so, Chair, and thank you very much. I feel at home. The chairperson asked a very difficult question and said, when is the latest date on which we expect the proclamation? And I want to be technical, saying within the next 10 days, frankly. I say within the next 10 days. If the 23rd falls within that period, well and good. But really and truly, that's really what we, you know, and a fundamental chairperson. I think it is important to point out that in this election, it's evident, following the piece of legislation that we applied, that we need a minimum of 73 days from the date of proclamation to election date. And one can simply start from that date coming backwards to come to what I have said. We can obviously do with more, but we are sticking to the bare minimum. I think that answers that question. The second issue I would deal with is the question in relation to the shortage of materials on election day. Essentially, there are no shortages of election material. There are permits often, and then situations arise. You will recall that when I did the presentation, I indicated that we have 4,392 wards, but we have employed 4,600 and odd people to manage the logistics within even those wards. This is precisely to deal with the problem. So steps have been taken to deal with the problem, not only on that day, but in terms of our procurement processes. We procure statistically correct per area of registration, and we source those voting stations accordingly. It is so that sometimes when person sees people in the queue and there are a registration official or an election official, panic is struck, and sometimes before we know it, people are saying we're going to have a shortage of materials, and the way we're going to have a shortage of materials in the next year becomes material is already short, and by the time it comes to the commission, it's added. That we manage on the ground, and we manage as well as we can. And I think Maida raised the question of we have increased stations, but we appear to have decreased staff. In the event that I communicated that well, I truly apologize. It is not so. However, if you look at the amount of staff we had per voting station, let's say in 2004, and what we have now, because we have more stations, we have had slightly less reduction, let's say by 1-2 people in a voting station. But every voting station has a minimum number of staff members. In this election, we'll have more staff members because we have more voting districts, we have more streams, and so on and so forth. Mayor Aputi, I hope the chairperson has somewhat alleviated your concern. These are realities we live with, and perhaps what this matter before the court has done is to bring them into sharp focus. The chairperson has indicated to you that we're working with every conceivable institution in the country that deals with details of persons. Home affairs, you know, at the moment, when you apply for an ID or passport, you give them your cell phone number, they let you know who, you know, the status. We have that data from them. We're working with them to do that, to link to the extent that we can, and then to go find address. But we do that with many people. The truth of the matter is the following, that StatsSA, as at the 1st of April this year, issued a new revised estimate of the number of households in the country. We had 15.2 million households in the country. 8.3 million of those households have no identifier or address. And the question then is raised, where are the addresses of these people? That's where we have to go and find sufficient particularities. There will not be any address. We will find a landmark that we are creating or have created to go and meet those people with. Regrettably, in the past, when there was no address, we indicated the fascists that a vote had no address. So you will recognize that that really is where we are doing. But we're not sitting back and doing nothing about it. We have created this landmark for what it's worth. That's where many people are going to register. But instead of providing us with an address, they will provide us with their sufficient particularities to enable us to locate them in a voting district where they are ordinary residents. So even when we have this situation, one can conceivably not see a situation where everyone will have an address, but everyone will either have an address or sufficient particularities. And I think that is very important. What the chairperson indicated was that at the time the thing of an address came in, there were already 18.476 million people on the voters roll. And that's really what we're dealing with. And I hope that puts that in context. The issue of cultivations in rural areas, nominations, we work extensively. Part of the planning for an election is the logistical aspect that the chairperson spoke about, you know, equivalent to preparation for a wartime. We look at every area. We then work with our stakeholders accordingly. I'll give you an example. Even in registration weekends, in the last registration weekend, there were places, for example, in Tavangulu, where they're just not accessible easily. You have to get a helicopter to drop you, your staff and the materials, and to uplift them when they finish. That's what we do. In places where flooding and rains and things like that happen, to the extent that we do, now, one of the things we do in the work that we do, we work with, even with disaster management. We get disaster management in municipalities, in provinces, at national level to assist us. So we do take the necessary precautions where it is possible or where we need to do so. Megan asked about the LMS facility and how relevant it has become. You know, at the risk of saying the good things we do, we rather concentrate on the problem, because the good things are still, the problems are still things we need to achieve. There's a lot of excellent work that has been done in that area. You know, the SMS, when we started off, was for somebody to check the registration details. Send your ID number and it will tell you whether you're registered or not. Watch it. In this election, for the first time, it's going to do an multiplicity of it. It will check whether you're registered. It will tell you what your whether you have address details or not, so that you help us if you don't have. It will tell you when candidates are have enrolled. If you want to know who your ward candidates are in your ward, it will tell you the results of an election in your ward if you need to know. There are a lot of things, but that we don't, you know, we didn't have enough time, Jefferson, to talk about these brilliant ideas that your country has embraced. But I want to just say that there is so much work that has happened, and it has evolved to enrich a voter's information even much more. It remains very relevant. In fact, this is a number, when we look at it, fairly synonymous with the three letters IEC. People know this number, and that's why we're consolidating all of these things, so that we don't give them more numbers to know. But for them to know that if they know that one number, it will give them a lot more information that they need from the Electoral Commission, depending on the stage of the electoral process in which we are. Dr. Masondo asked about the statistics on the last two slides, and I must apologize, Jefferson. In your package, and I will leave as I've indicated, the revised package with my colleague Eddie here. The statistics have been updated in the Masondo. The ones that you're reading on this one, I'm aware, are different. I do apologize. When we prepared our data on Friday, and when we looked at it yesterday, a lot of it has happened. In fact, one of the things we haven't shared and have not been asked is that for those statistics to be different is precisely about the work that I think Honorable Shoka has asked, Honorable Fickland has asked, and that MSP has asked, and many others have said, you know, what I do. There's a lot of work that we do. If you come to our office in Centurion at the moment, we do work 24/7. There are people who are in there who are ensuring that we have addresses to the extent that we have, and can update the voters' roll and make sure that those numbers come down. And we have even very clearly seen. The first graphic, which is the one on the board, on the screen, said voters' roll pre-registration weekend. It was 24 million. And at that point, exactly what the chairperson indicated. We had 5% of people with addresses. If you go to the next one, it's after, and what we are doing now. We have 26.3 million people. We have reduced that number of persons without addresses. And we are dealing with an increased number, not 24 million, on 26 million. So there's been a lot of work, Chairperson, that we have been doing in this respect. And I hope it clarifies the question that the Masondo had. People living in the same community, we did indicate. The issue is people are mobile at any point in time. And what they provide to us when they apply for registration, we capture that on our systems. At the moment, one of the things that we are doing is to dispel the issue that the IEC has pushed some button and destroyed a whole lot of addresses on the system. It is not so. Not a single address has been removed from the system. Not a single one. The first time a voter's roll was printed with addresses and used in a voting station was in the first registration weekend of the 3rd and the 6th of May. Never before was that done in this country. And we continue to do so. So there are many voters that will say, I've seen my address on the voter's roll in 1999, in 2004. We never had it there. The truth is, we only put it for the first time. And we do so that we can enhance the harvesting of sufficient address articulars. And it is proving to work. Observers, we have a situation where observers apply to us as the Electoral Commission in terms of Section 84 of the Act. And when they do so, sometimes they are regional, sometimes they are national, and sometimes they are they may say operate only, you know, in this province or this municipality. They are accredited with that understanding that we have. The Electoral Commission does not tell them where to go. These are people that are supposed to police us. They choose anywhere to go, and we will not restrict them because they've got to see. If they suspect that there's going to be some nefarious exercise taking place west of the city, they'll go there. We'll not restrict them. So it's a choice that they make. We just accredit them, and they will go to places where they need to go. The chairperson has spoken about a number of things, grants are disciplined, the others are left for disaster, just in case disaster gets rid. The question, Honorable Shop, 616 grant, re-registration in the CMDB. You know, we like this, this phenomenon of people re-registering if they are not sure, or, you know, going to checking and saying, well, I've now moved, I now need to re-register another DD. Re-registration in the same DD has no effect at all, except for, in this instance, people gave us their official particularities or address. That's what we were asking for. Yes, the 616 that we now have, we have sufficient particularities for, or addresses. We never had before. That is important. That's why there will be people who are re-registered in the same DD. Some will say, I've obtained a new ID, the ID that I had with my registration sticker is lost, or whatever happened, and I want to be absolutely sure that I do not, you know, create a problem on election day. They come and say, I want to re-register because I lost my ID with this. We, you know, in the process of harvesting more data from them as we are required, we re-register. So there is no malafide or anything. It is just condemnation and worse, just as well for ourselves. Chairperson, I think I have dealt with the concerns that you asked me to deal with. I leave the others to the Vice Chair.
I just needed you just to clarify one point here before we get off. There is this situation where a person is registered in a VG where he votes for local government.
Yes.
Then come provincial and national elections. He's in Johannesburg.
Yes.
Then he says, they say I can vote from anywhere else. Then register in Soweto to vote for provincial and national elections.
Yes.
Then come local government elections. He's back in Eastern Cape, where he usually votes. He doesn't find the name. What is the situation? What happened?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. The analogy is the following. In the election of the National Assembly, the country is one constituency. Whether you are in Mushina or in Cape Town, there is one election of the National Assembly. And whether you're a South African, even in the Republic or outside of the Republic, that you qualify to vote because a mission, South African mission outside the territory of the Republic. So it is. And so in that regard, the law currently recognizes that voters should be permitted to cast their ballot in the election of the National Assembly. So you may be registered in the DD, find yourself away from the DD, wherever it might be, but in a territory that is part of the Republic, you will be allowed to vote for the elections of the National Assembly. The province is a constituency a constituency for all of the people registered in that province. And therefore, if you are in that province in the provincial elections, the law recognizes that and it allows you. In municipal elections, you can only vote in that ward because that ward, in that DD, because that is where you live. And that you are choosing an elected representative for you in that area. And that's what the law recognizes, and that's what we are doing. These are not determinations made by the Commission. These are things that are in the law. One is the VASA is going to give us a section. Thank you very much.
Proceed,
Director. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm going to try to be very brief in relation to all these issues. But just to clarify one aspect in what the CEO was saying, and I think it's important. Apart from what he has indicated, remember during local government elections, you've got almost 5,000 different ballot papers, because these ballot papers relate to wards, and the candidates contending in the elections are different from one ward to the other. So that's why it's important for you to register, to vote where you are registered. Now, if you had voted, you had registered in Lexington and you voted in Gauteng, and you obviously would lose your provincial, because your provincial vote, because you've got only 10 elections taking place on the day of national and provincial elections. And therefore the ballot papers that you'd get in Gauteng would be different from the ballot paper that people in Eastern Cape would have. And therefore, even if you had voted in Gauteng, you cannot in local government elections therefore vote again in Gauteng. You've got to go where you are registered and where your name will be reflected in the voters. Now, the issue of I want to also talk a little bit about the addresses. And both the chairperson and the CEO have indicated the kind of the complexity. But the reason why sometimes people don't understand what was actually going on is that when we started with the registration in 1998, there are two systems that were running concurrently. One, we introduced the technology called Zebra's machine, which technology we use to capture the details on the IT. The details on your IT will only be your name and your ID number. But also in the same system, it will also reflect your voting district, in other words, where you registered. So when we take this information to our offices, we dock the information, we are able to tell you very quickly, within a very short space of time, how many people registered, how many women, how many are youth, etc., etc. It's because we have used that information from the ZZ machine. Now, that ZZ machine does not have addresses. The addresses are in the document now that you signed. So you've got to take that information again and transport it to the system by capturing that information. So many things happen in the process of that. For one reason or another, you can lose forms. The second reason is that you might find that the information is insufficient, certainly the postal address, or you can't read the handwriting of a person. There are just lots of problems that make it difficult for people to input the information. And therefore, that's why we have a gap that we have. There are many reasons that we can actually give to this. There is also a case where in one area there was fire, we lost some of the forms in the process. But also because during the period when we started, this was not a necessary addresses. Information was not captured. It was not that critical. We were happy that the person is registered. And we got that information of the person, and the person is reflected in the correct voting district or in a segment of voters' room where the person is registered. I thought I should just add on to what the CEO and the chairperson already responded to. Now, in relation to Rwanda, we've got to have the elections everywhere in the country, including Rwanda. Because if we don't have the elections in Rwanda taking place, there's a problem that we'd like to have. One is that there is a municipality that must be established, which includes Mulimuli. Now, if you don't have such a big chunk of votes, you can't constitute that municipality. But it's also got implications for the district. So it is because the district also is constituted on the basis of the votes of here, and as well as those that are coming from the local municipality. It means you can't constitute the district municipality. That's what I'm saying. You've got to proceed with the understanding that elections are going to take place in Rwanda and anywhere else in the country. And not to do so, you are compromising the process. But also remember, the elections are going to take place they've got to take place within 90 days after the date of the last elections. And the last date is the 16th of August. So there can't be any postponement, because if you were to postpone or want to postpone an election for any one area, you are already compromising on the date that is there in the Constitution. You might want to come to Parliament and say to Parliament, you've got to change the Constitution in order to allow those who have not voted to vote. And I'm sure there is no appetite from anybody to change the Constitution for these people. That's why it's got to happen. The election's got to happen. But the good thing about those areas is that a registration had already taken place. So it is not as though you don't have a voter's roll for those areas. Of course, during the past 2 weekends, we would have given people opportunity, like any other person, to be able to update their details, to give more information. New people who have come into the area would have had an opportunity to register or to re-register in that particular area. But they have not had that opportunity. But we still have a voter's roll for these areas. So going into elections, even if proclamation happens on Monday, it is not as though we don't have a segment of voters' role for those areas. We do, and we use that voters' role. And another issue that we've been emphasizing in relation to Vuani also is that because we have a facility in the municipal offices, they must go and register. Those people who want to change the details, those who want to vote, or rather who want to register, must go to the municipal offices and do so. We don't know how many people have taken advantage of this platform, but the platform does exist. If it was going to be possible for us to have targeted registration after the situation has been resolved, we're going to be doing that. But now that the proclamation is going to be happening, we can't make an exception for one or any other area in the country. Proclamation means proclamation for elections. We need to screw up the country. There's an issue that was raised in relation to observers. Now, the observers determine for themselves where they want to be observing the elections. All we do is just accredit them. We can give them information about areas where we think their role could actually be important, but they are an independent entity. And therefore, if you want to be around something in order to be able to do shopping, they will go to something. Even if you say to them, we think that Solo is an area that you need to go to, they're not going to go to Solo. They determine their own program depending on their own budgets. We don't give them money. So also that is an aspect that determines where they go and how they deal with issues. There was also an issue around the media being used for purposes of voter education. We do indeed use media a lot for the purpose of voter education. We have a relationship with SABC, both radio as well as television, and we are utilizing those platforms for the purpose of elections. We also work very closely with the community radio stations, and they assist us in terms of voter education processes. Of course, in terms of commercial newspapers, we've got to buy space, we've got to use space for purposes of voter education. But from time to time, in our conversations with SANEF and similar bodies, we emphasize a need for them to help us in terms of dissemination of information related to the elections. I would like to believe that I've covered all those an area related to the code of conduct. Code of conduct, the mechanism that we have put in place, I think for the first time we have established what we call a directorate related dealing with electoral offences. And this directorate will be assisting in terms of looking at the issues, trying to see whether issues can be resolved as disputes, or whether those issues need to be referred to the electoral court. And then we will be using that particular unit to try to make sure that we monitor the implementation. We check with all the political parties and candidates, because once you participate in elections, you basically subscribe to the code of conduct. It's a requirement. So you subscribe to the code of conduct, and therefore you are bound by provisions within code of conduct as either a candidate or a political party contesting the elections. So that's how we're going to be dealing with those issues. And remember, some of the issues are pure criminal offenses. And criminal offenses must be taken by the police, but we'll be working very closely also with the police in relation to dealing with all those aspects.
Thank you very much. And I think one critical question from Magda was to check the readiness and the commitment of the IEC to issue a red card in terms of the law. I think that is what you raised. And then, you know, following the analogy of the chair, can we hear you? What?
We are very, very committed in ensuring that there is compliance with the code of conduct. And if there is a party or a candidate that violates the provisions of the conduct, we will definitely take action.
No, thank you very much, and honorable members and the IEC and the support from Home Affairs. I'm not sure whether Home Affairs got the word or two.
Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, from our side, as the CEO has indicated, we will stand ready and prepared even before the elections of the 3rd to be able to provide the support. The offices will remain open on that day and to ensure that people are assisted as they need assistance, but also that we will continue to work with IEC to really request that citizens collect the IDs as well as the smart ID cards that are lying in offices. We still have that challenge. People are collecting those. And we will be sharing that with the IEC. But the political parties should be able to encourage citizens' potential voters to also support and collect. On the issue of the addresses, as the CEO has indicated, our contribution would be mainly, as has indicated, the issue of getting the data of all the SMS we have, because most of them are recent, and then hand over that CD to IEC for them then to be able to also utilize those to contact people to continue to either vote or to update their addresses. Thank you very much, Manuji.
Thank you very much. You nearly went away with that crucial information. No, thank you very much. And I think what we really need to also be aware of, which is the intention that I think we said before, is that as much as the IEC is expected to reflect addresses on the voter roll, but the provision of address is a matter that lies with municipalities, local governments, to provide for their citizens with addresses and the rest, and then those citizens, when they go and register, then they must provide those addresses then to the IEC. And I think it's just a difficult situation that they are having in their two hands on matters that doesn't really lie within their power. And of course, is that all of us, then we just need to continue and pray that the outcome that will come from the court would also assist us to actually hold the election. And if we hold the election, then the program of the IEC, I'm sure we have had 73 days, and then it's going to be very tight. And then I think it is all that is that as a committee, we can call upon political parties then to ensure that they adhere to the cut-off date that may be there in terms of submission of documentation and whatever, and also make a call to political parties that they really deploy party agents that have got a reasonable capacity to understand the situations that they will be dealing with within the voting station,
to ensure that we have got a successful election. I'm sure you know that ordinarily, elections is almost some sort of a war. Election. And some other people may deploy people that are warmongers, fighting mongers, and instead of presenting intelligent arguments within the voting station to get certain things resolved, then they resort to fighting in a voting station. So it is important that political parties really make sure that they deploy people that represent them in the voting station, people with reasonable capacity to understand the situation that pertains to election and the importance of election into our democracy. I think that should be able to assist us. And of course, then it goes also to the IEC to ensure that the persons that are inside the voting station, they can be easily identifiable. If you issue a uniform, make sure that all of them, they understand that they are in the uniform when they are in the voting station, so that people with problems then should not find it difficult to find an IEC person to actually get clarification. It should not go to somebody else who present a picture that is representing IEC when it's not an IEC person. I think that's very important as well. And also, of course, is that those officers ensure that they are properly trained, because they are responsible sometimes in the voting station to party agents. If they are not properly caught up, only the properly trained officials will be able to communicate better information and then to whoever is in the voting station, regardless of the election. I really still need to reiterate that the quality of our election will also largely depend on the quality of participation and input of political parties into this work of elections. And I think, honorable members, we have really completed the hearing that we had. Let's appreciate and thank the IEC again for my further support. Thank you.